Welcome, everybody. We are, this is the 10th in, I can't believe 10 already, in 1500s, February 3rd, 2018. Okay, we're talking about 1500s. Today I'd like to focus a little bit about Rabbi Yosef Cairo. Last week we spoke about, 2 weeks ago we spoke about Tzfat. Last week we spoke about the Smicha controversy, which we'll see a little bit today that Rabbi Yosef Cairo was one of those that, I guess, voted for it and was one of those that received that Smicha. And this week I'd like one of the greatest personalities, and there were a lot of great personalities at this time in Tzfat, was Rabbi Yosef Cairo. Just a little bit about Rabbi Yosef Cairo. Rabbi Yosef Cairo was born in 1488. He was born in Toledo, Spain. He left the Spain, I guess he was 1488, and 1492. He had to leave Spain. And he left with his family, and they wandered until they ended up in Constantinople in Turkey. I guess Toledo is around smack in the middle of Spain. And that's where he started. And Yosef was, first he was his Rebbe. His first Rebbe was his father, Rabbi Ephraim, a scholar in his own right, who was appointed the chief rabbi of Nicopol, Bulgaria. So Rabbi Yosef Cairo grew up in Nicopol, Bulgaria. When his father passed away, his uncle, Rabbi Yitzchak Cairo, adopted him as his own son. I guess if you want to know where Bulgaria is, this is Bulgaria, and Nicopol is like the north of Bulgaria.
That's where they went after the...
That's right. Right, that's where the family was. His father got a job in Nicopol. This was also near Salonika. And Salonika in those days was the place, at least in the Muslim world, that had the greatest yeshivas. That I think we did speak about this a little bit, and that was the center of learning. I mean, I shouldn't say like that. There was learning all over, but the greatest yeshivas and the greatest minds, that was in Greece, in Salonika. So as you could see, I mean, probably was a few hundred miles, but relatively, Bulgaria and Greece, they actually border on each other. And it wasn't that far. We'll see. But he did pass through. Rabbi Yosef was a prodigy child. He moved from Constantinople to Adrianople, where he married the daughter of Rav Chaim al-Balag. And he soon established a base medrash in Adrianople. And at the age of 34, he started writing his commentary of the base Yosef. This is where Adrianople is. Okay, this is again the Ottoman Empire, and it's a little bit to the east of Bulgaria. Also nearby, and that's where he started. He opened up his yeshiva, and that's where he was. Now, eventually he's going to make his way to Tzfat, but in Adrianople, where he was the Rav, that's where he started writing his Beis Yosef. We call, if you were to call, some Rabbanim are called by their book names. Their Sfarim are so famous, that's how we know them. And probably the greatest example would be the Chafetz Chaim. That's it, The Chafetz Chaim, he had a real name. His mother did not name him Chafetz when he was born, right? His name was Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan, and he is known as the Chafetz Chaim because when his sefer hit the market, it made waves, ripples, across the entire Jewish world. That was the Shulchan Aruch for speech, as you know, the Beis Yosef, or the Shulchan Aruch was for what to do during the day. The Shulchan Aruch for speech was the Chafetz Chaim. It was something that nobody could ever realize how to, you know, codify all those laws, and he did it, and it was such a big hit. Now, the Chafetz Chaim wrote many Sfarim, including the Mishneh Berurah. The Mishnah Brura, which actually really has to do with the Beis Yosef, because this is the what we follow today in Halacha, all based on what the Beis Yosef wrote, is also his. But we know Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan is the name of Chavetz Chaim. Rabbi Yosef Cairo is going to be known as the Beis Yosef, because that was his first major magnus opus. It was a work that was, you could probably say, beyond human, beyond what he put in. As you can see, it took about, well, we're going to see, this is in his preface. I'd like to read the preface. This is the preface that he wrote in his Beis Yosef. He says, in his long exile, we go from place to place, so many tragedies, and the Torah scholar, you know, Torah does well when there's security and there's peace, and they're able to sit and learn. You know, Baruch Hashem, let's say you want to take like America here today. Torah is flourishing in America like it has never, ever been. And why is that? Because Baruch Hashem, here in America, Hashem has granted us a tremendous gift. We have security. We have, wealth. We're not poor. And when we're in a good environment, at least the surroundings are good, so you're able to learn. And so he says that, you know, again, he's coming after the Spanish expulsions. He's coming after an entire century, starting with the Black Plague in 1348 in the 1400s, and Ashkenazic Jewry has been picked up and uprooted, and they're ending up, they're now mostly in Poland. And you have also the, Sephardic Jewry, they were totally kicked out of Spain, and they're in different countries. So he writes, you know, the Torah, the disciples become diminished, not just into two schools of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, but rather into countless schools. And this is due to the many works which are composed explaining the legal system of the Torah. And what has been happening, especially since the Rishonim, is that each Rishon, or each Rav, would go ahead and they would start to write their own halachas. So you didn't have just one halacha, right? You didn't have one sefer. You had countless. You had 10, 20, 30 different Rabbanim writing halachas. So he say, what do we do? And even though the author's intentions was to enlighten our state of darkness, there really is now more confusion, because you could pull in any number of Rishonim, and you could have, you know, the bad joke is three opinions, you know, but you know, and you have at La Halacha, you'll have so many different diversions of opinions. And now what do you do? Who do you follow? And that's where he starts with. And then each one composed an independent work, either duplicating with that which was already written, composed or contradicted other authors without mentioning them. For many poskim will cite certain halachic without comment, as if it was universally accepted. In other words, that's it, this is the halacha. But wait a minute, there are others that argue, and he doesn't say, he's not bringing down in his halacha sefer that others do argue. Sometimes when the research is done, you'll frequently find that some they disagree on his decision. And this is apparent to anyone who reads carefully the works of the authorities. Anybody, you just find that's one major problem that was happening. Now, so let's say a person himself would want to research. Okay, that's it. I'm going to go to the halacha. So how do you go through the halacha? What you do is you start with the Gemara. You start with the Gemara, and then you got to go through the Rishonim, right? So the way halacha is paskin today, if you wanted to do this, is you pick a Rishon. And you work from there. In other words, you learn the Gemara, and you probably Rashi and Tosis, those probably go hand in hand. They're on the page. They're the most essential. And then from there, you pick a Rishon and you follow him through. If you're following, I don't know, let's say the Rif or the Ramban or the Rambam or the Rashba, you know, or the just to mention a few, you know, the Ran, the Rush. I mean, I just mentioned a few. Each one has their own parish on the Gemara. So you'd follow those through. So so let's say you wanted to do that. Okay, I want to find out, I want to learn halacha. What do you do about cooking, Bishul? So now, okay, does anybody here know which Gemaras deal with cooking. So you got to find the Gemara. Which Gemara is it? Where is it? And it's not. It would be nice if all the Gemaras, you had a Gemara of Bishul and all the Gemaras of Bishul were in one place, but they're not. You can have it in Shabbos, you have in Ksubis, you have there all over Shas, you have Gemaras of this. You know, today, the printed Gemara that we have, I guess, I don't know if we really fully appreciate it, but when the Gemara was originally written, handwritten, they just had the Gemara itself. But since then, it's been developed. We have the Rashi and the Tosas on the page, but also what do they call it when... We have, on the Gemara, you have where to find other places. Cross references, thank you. That's the word I was looking for. Right, the Ein Mishpat. They have cross references, so if it's quoted in another Gemara somewhere, it'll be a little asterisk on the side, and you could say, oh, I could look up these Gemaras. So, you know, you could find out where it is, but that's only since the Gemaras have been printed. And each printing wants to, you know, they want to add, and it's a great thing that they do, and they all add these little things. But these types of additions, these cross references, and all these things on the side of the page weren't there to begin with. So then, if he says, like, he brings down the Rambam, he says the Rambam doesn't like even tell you where his sources are. That was one of the major complaints against the Rambam. The Rambam went ahead, and he took all the halachos and made them in a certain order nicely, but then he gives a psak and he doesn't tell you where does he get this psak from. How does he know which gemara? What is he referring to? And sometimes it'll be a gemara that apparently argues with the Rambam. So for the Rambam's sefer Mishnah Torah probably sparked more svarim in the history of the world than any other sefer. I mean, there are clearly over 10,000 svarim all on the Rambam. And a lot of it is trying to, you know, find out where the source of the Rambam is and to answer contradictions of the Rambam and et cetera. So what do you do? This is the problem that the Beis Yosef was having in his day. Now he says, if one doesn't possess a full understanding of the Gemara, he may well search in vain in a previous lean work for a source of a particular halacha. In the case of the Magid Mishnah, this may be because the halacha is based on a text which disagrees with the text of the Rambam. Now the Magid Mishnah is one of the mefarshim in the Rambam, and the Magid Mishnah argues on the Rambam, but it could be the Magid Mishnah Gemara had a little different text, a girsa change, a different text than the. And the Rambam, and that's maybe why they argue. So how are you going to know? You're just coming in now trying to find halacha. Can I do this on Shabbos or not? Like, you know, you're just trying to find out. So what do you do? In the case of, he had a Rabbeinu Yeruchim. Rabbi Yeruchim, I guess, was trying to make like a shortened halacha. So sometimes he would leave things out. He wouldn't quote the whole piece because he was trying to make things short and easy. Okay, besides all that, now, then one researches a source in the Gemara, he must also research Rashi's commentary with Tosfos, and then the Rif, Rush, Ran, Mordechai, and the Rambam. These are the main halachic, and all the other authorities, as well as the great works and responses, Shilas and Tshuvas, to verify if the halach is usually accepted, or if it's if the people argue on this. And then by the time, you know, you get to through all this, you know, this halacha, to the point you forgot already originally, like, where you're starting, what your starting point is. And this is his preface. This is what the Beis Yosef is saying was the issue. You know, we shouldn't feel so bad in 2018, because in 1553, 1533, they were having, 500 years ago, they were having the same issues, you know? So this is the, okay. So therefore, this is a massive undertaking. So what has he decided to do? Then he says, well, you could do the condensed versions. There are certain svarim, like Sefer Mitzvah Sakata, and the Agor, the Orchus Chaim, and they were like what today we would probably call like the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, you know, like simple. They would, you know, just take this quick halachas. He says, but you, again, you're missing all the points. You know, they're a bridge if it doesn't have it. You're not learning the halacha. You don't know the sugi. You don't know all the ins and outs, you know, the details. You just know the certain small things that they're quoting. So now what do you do? So what does he do? Because of this, I, Yosef ben Harav Ephraim ben Harav Yosef, the most unworthy of my clan, Rabbi Yosef really had tremendous amount of humility. I don't know if we're going to see it here, but there was somebody, one of the Kabbalists, said that this work in Shemayim, it had to be done. And in his generation, there were three people that could have done it. And they, how he knows this, I don't know. He says that, you know, he was a Kabbalist, and he says that it was given to Rabbi Yosef Cairo because of his humility. And he really was, in terms of humility, he you know, because of that, in addition to his erudition, in addition to his chachman, what everything he knew. Three people, they all had that, but him, the Beis Yosef's humility was over and above, and that's what gave, in Shemayim, that's what they gave him, the Siyata Deshmaya, the help to do it. Because of this, I have arisen to give honor to the to Hashem and take vigorous action to remove the obstacles from the path and decide to compose a work. This is what is his goal, to compose a work that would include all of the laws that are practiced today, together with an explanation of their sources in the Talmud. Okay, so he would, all the laws and the explanation of the Talmud and all the various opinions of the poskim. I mean, this is going to be all-inclusive. Okay? So, without exception, this is what his goal is. Now, the question is what does he do? Now, does he how does he do this? Does he start over? In other words, not only are you going to have the Ran, the Rif, the Rush, the Rambam, the Mordechai, but now you'll also have the Rav Yosef Cairo. You know, are you going to have that as well? So that was his, do I start with myself or do I pick somebody else from who has done a previous work and attach it to that work? And that was his, so he says, it started by myself, you know, okay, then I'll just be one more of everybody else. Then he says, so his next one was going to attach it to the Rambam. By the way, the Rambam is much more inclusive than, much more information than what the Beis Yosef was working on, because the Rambam was working even on halachos that are not nogea today. He has halachos about karbanos, he has sacrifices, he has halachos about kings, about the Sanhedrin. So his Yada Chazaka is everything. So I guess the Beis Yosef would have picked those sections that are have to do with daily life. So, but the problem with doing it the Rambam is he's one opinion. And the Rambam himself didn't quote the source. So, like, if I'm going to do it to the Rambam is working for himself. The Rambam wasn't, I guess, what you would call a malachite, where he'd gather other people's opinions and work like that. So, he decided to attach it to the Arbaturim, the Torah. Now, the Torah was, he also had a different classification, a codification. We've mentioned this a while back. The Tor was the son of the Rush. The Rush originally was in Germany, and because he was afraid that he would be taken captive by King Rudolf, the Emperor of Germany at the time, he ran for his life. Why would they want to take the Rush as a captive? Does anybody know? Because he was a Talmud of Rami Rattenberg. Rami Rattenberg was in jail.
He was also native.
Huh?
I think he was a son-in-law.
Could be. That I don't remember. But so he was, and just to make a long story short, he was collecting money to redeem the Maram Rattenberg, to ransom the Maram Rattenberg, who was the acknowledged Gadol HaDor of the generation. And while he almost had all the money, the Maram Rattenberg died in jail. So the Rush was afraid if the emperor would find out that he collected most of the money, he'd want the money anyway. So the Rush felt it was time to get out of Dodge, whatever, just like leave. So he left, and whereas the Marat, he ended up in Spain, in Toledo, Spain. It's very interesting. That's where the Beis Yosef was from. And I wonder if maybe that's why. I wonder if that's why the he may have picked the Tor, because the Tor, who lived in Toledo, Spain, wrote his work in Spain. The Tor, was one of the many sons of the Rush, and he wrote that. He wrote his commentary there. What he did is basically he came up with a new way of categorizing things. He categorized it into four sections. The Archaim, Archaim, which is the daily life, with morning to evening, starting Moda'ani, you know, in the morning, you know, waking up, getting up in the morning, Skaber Kari, Lama Babo, all the way until the, what do you do at night and holidays. That's Archaim. He had a second section, which was Ebenezer. Ebenezer is mainly between man and wife, marriage laws. This would have laws of marriage and divorce and ksuba, and those laws that have to do with men and women. And the then came Choshen Mishpat, which were monetary laws, all laws about making a bezdin and witnesses and what happens if somebody damages. All these are in Choshen Mishpat. And the last section was Yoredeya. Yoredeya is more of a like various laws, including kashrus. You know, what makes something kosher, milk and meat, had a shecht. So if a person wants to become a rabbi, still, I mean, it's maybe changing a little bit, but generally, a person would have to know Yoredeya. It used to be that everybody was shechting, so they'd come with, you know, animals that were shechted, and the rabbi had to paskin. Today, it's not as common for the average rabbi to have a shayla on her. But in any case, that's what you know, if you want yori yori yadin yadin, then you have to do choshen mishpat as well. So that's the way the Tor categorized everything. And the Tor was a malakit. He brought many opinions. And because so he had a what to work from. So he started with using the Tor, and he wrote his commentary called Beis Yosef on the Tor.
I'm sorry, I missed the first one you mentioned.
Archaim. Now, I would just mention Archaim. In fact, the Mishnah Brura that we have is on Archaim. Okay, so our Mishnah Brura is only on the section of Archaim.
That covers what?
And that covers your daily life, your daily living from morning. You know, that would cover in the morning, and then tzitzis and tefillin and davening. And eating at the meals, then it would cover, you know, mincha, ma'ariv. It would cover Shabbos and the Yomim Tovim. Basically, that's what Archaim is. It took the Chavetz Chaim about 25 years to start to complete the Mishnah Brura. He started when he was 70.
Wow.
About when he was 70, and then after he, look at that, you know, that's, I mean, you know. And then, the Chavetz Chaim was unbelievable because he had so many facets. Some people are into Sfarim, but they don't have Talmidim, right? And some people, or Yeshiva, some people have Talmidim and they don't have Sfarim. And the Chavetz Chaim was like everything, you know, besides having the entire, you know, religious world on his hanging on his decision with him and Chaim Ozer. Brzezinski, he was Machaber Sfarim, and he had a yeshiva in Radin, and he was involved everything that he could with the entire world. But in any case, so he started with Yoredeya, but at 95, I don't think he got too far. I don't know how, you know, I that's what I heard. He was ready to start the next one. But basically the Mishnah Brura is, well, it's way, way ahead. This is after, you know, we'll talk where the Mishnah Brura fits in. But okay, so how did I get to the Mishnah? So the Tor, that was the breakdown of the four parts. And he said he decided that he was going to use the Tor as the basis. So just like you had a Gemara, and Rashi and Tosus are on the outside explaining what the Gemara is, so the Tor would be something like the Rashi. Now, he gave for himself about five or six goals. And he's writing in his preface, this is the purpose of my sefer. And when you read this purpose of like four or five, or any one of these would have been like over the top, unbelievable. And the fact that he was able to put this all together, so purpose number one goal is the purpose of the four matters of his work to clarify the din, which the author of the Arba Tumim quotes. And whether it's a source is the source a Mishnah? Okay, is it from the Mishnayis? Is it a Brisa? Is it a Tosefta? Is it a statement of the Talmud, Bavli? Is it a Gemara? Is it a Yeshalmi? Is it a Sifri? Is it a Sifra, Sifri, or Mechilta? A Sifra, Sifri, Mechilta is almost like a Medrash, but it's a halachic Medrash. On Psukim. So we have Midrashim on Psukim. Some of it is halachic, which one of them is Bamidbar, one of them is Dvarim, one of them is Vayikra. You know, they have the Safra, Safri, and Mechilta. And then there's also Medrash, with Medrash Rabbah, Yalkut Shimoni. So you have different types of Midrashim. This would be like comparable to the halachic Medrash. And these are halachas on the Psukim itself. So where is it? It could be anywhere. So the Beis Yosef is going to say the halacha that the Torah brings down, he's going to tell you where it's from. Okay, so if you want to look, go now you can go to the Mishnah Brisa Tosefta Gemara Bavli Shalmi Safra Safri Mechilti. You could look it up yourself. Okay, that's one. Number two, he's going to tell you, is it universally accepted? The Torah may have felt that that was the halacha for the Torah and for Toledo and for his community, his area, his time, his place, but that may not be universally accepted. So number two, is it universally accepted? Is the din a subject? Is it a machlokus in the Gemara? Maybe there are Tanayim that argue. Maybe there are Amorayim that argue. And the author of the Arba Tumim ruled in favor of one of the opinions. So sometimes the Torah would say, this is the halacha. But wait a minute, it's a machlokus in the Gemara. Is this opinion in the Amorah another opinion in the Gemara? So that he'll tell you. Or no, the Gemara comes out, like this halacha, or there's a machlokus, and what is that machlokus? Number two. Number three, he's going to explain the reasoning behind the halacha. Okay, sometimes it's mutter. Why is this permitted? Well, sometimes you could do something on Shabbos because you put two or three things together. It's a davar she'ein miskaven, and there's a big loss, and there's a chol she'ein bo sakana, and all these you could sometimes take two or three different reasons, put them together, and that's why something is mutter, that's why something is aser. So besides, once he tells you where it is, and if it's a machlokus or not, he's now going to tell you what's the reason behind this opinion, and if there's a machlokus, what's the reason behind the other opinion? Okay, that's the third thing that is. He says also, if the author fails to quote from the arguments of certain poskim, will quote opinions together with their reasoning. If words of certain poskim are not clear, then he'll tell them, this person said this, it may not be clear, I'll tell you what he meant. So that's number three. Number four, this is especially true, let's say, for the Rambam. The Rambam, in very, very, very certain areas, was very unclear. He was very vague. So you had to know, what did he mean? And you can't look up his sources because he didn't bring any sources. It is said about the Rambam at the end of his days, you know, like somebody, he said if he would be able to do it again, he would write the sources. He would put it in. He realized. He'll explain... especially in the case of the Rambam, many instances the position is vague and unclear. We'll quote the explanations of the Magen Mishnah, the Ran, how the Magen Mishnah explains the Rambam, how the Ran explains it, and we will offer, and if at times we feel their explanation, their reason is no good, we'll give our own reason. Yeah, I'll give you a different reason why he holds that. So he'll fill in reasons as well. Okay, that's the third thing, reasons. Number four, in some instances when the author, meaning the Torah, points out there's a question on a certain opinion of the poskin, we'll offer an answer. We'll see. Look, you know. And then if there exists a novel legal opinion written by a poskin or commentator but not quoted by the Torah, let's say there's a halacha that the Torah didn't bring in. So he is going to include that as well. So besides telling you where it is and telling you if there's a machlokas or not and telling you what the reason is, He will, if they, you, and answer any questions on the opinions. If something was left out in the halacha, he'll tell you that halacha. Okay, that's fine. Now, there's one other thing here. Now, the result of this is that anyone who has worked before him in the word, I just want to show you where halachas come from. In the words of the Talmud, Rashi, Tosis, Ran, Rif, Rash, Mordechai, Rambam, Hagoyis, Maimini, Magid, Mishnah, Rabbeinu Yeruchim, Sefer Atruma, Shibol Zalekat, Rokeach, Shariduma, Sefer Dashba, Sefer Etan, Nimuke, Yosef, Smag, Smak, Archas Chayim, Teres Abayis, Hagoyis, Ashri, Sefer Hamanag, Agor, Sefer Bali Nefesh of the Raivet, Chufas of Rush, Arashba, Rivash, Tashbats, Marek, Chumas of Deshen. Now, if you have all this clearly arranged before him and all their words will be explained well, then that's where we got it from. And sometimes at the end he says some places will quote from the Zohar.
No,
I'm reading. So this is what, just to show you, this is what he was working with. Mind-boggling. Just, you know, I could just, you know, show you, I'm going to show you, Mr. Shem, what it looks like, you know, in the Torah itself, you know, the Beis Yosef. But this is where he dealt with. So he had all of these opinions. He told you what their opinions are. He explained their opinions. Okay. And that was his job. That was his purpose of the Sefer. The only thing is now he has a big, another issue is, how does he decide the halacha? So what is he going to do? Who do you decide? Let's say, I don't know, five of them paskin one way, or seven of them paskin another way. Or let's say it's, you know, whatever it is. How is he going to come up what is he going to do? And why should you trust him over anybody else? Okay, so he explained everything right and clear. And of course, there's going to be machlokas in somewhere, right? So how is he going to come up with the halacha? Because that's the real, what's the main goal of the Beis Yosef? How do you decide all this? So what is he going to do? Does anybody know what he did? Huh?
Flip a coin.
Flip a coin, yeah.
Majority opinion?
You know, the joke is, you know, a professor was watching a kid, somebody taking a test. It was a true-false test. So he sees him flipping a coin and then writing an answer. He says, what are you doing? He says, well, that's, you know, every question, I flip the coin, and if it's heads, it's true, tails, it's false. Fine. So at the end, when everybody hands it in, he sees he's frantically flipping his coin very quickly. So he says, what are you doing now? He says, I'm checking my answers. All right, so how do you decide? So he came up with, I guess for him, he must have had a Masorah on this. He must have had a tradition, and it actually says that he had, like, it's quoted that he had 200 rabbis that agreed with this. And this decision, the way he's going to come up with what the halacha is, caused a tremendous, tremendous controversy in Ashkenaz, in Europe. The Ashkenazim went crazy over this. I mean, crazy, like, they were so, like, taken aback by this. Okay? What did he do? Okay, so at first he writes, this is all in his introduction, he says at first he writes, he'll from Svara, he'll just see what he says, and he'll make the determination, he'll decide based on his Svara, you know, who's right and wrong. And then he said to him, he says, who am I? Again, that's the humility. And I mean, here you had all these great people. How do you decide if Rashi is right or Tosis is right? Or how do you decide between the Rambam and the Rif? Or how do you decide between, you know, just pick any two. Who am I? So I'm going to say you're right and you're wrong. So what did he do? And he came up with a brilliant, brilliant way of how to do this. Okay? And that is, again, who has the audacity to decide between these two people? How could I do that? Therefore, he says, I decided that since there exists, now this was not agreed upon about the Ashkenazim. And that's why when you read the Shulchan Aruch and the Beis Yosef, who's on the rest of the page? They're all Ashkenazim. Why? Because the Sfarim, there was nothing more to say. He got it right. That's it. He did such a great job, and he clarified everything. And that's it. That was the final word. There was no reason to write anything else. When it hit Europe, when it hit Poland, they said, this is all wrong. And therefore, what happened? But what happened is you see how Hashem warns, and it ended up such a that we'll see. It ended up good, not good. It ended up great. It ended up like the best. But this is how he decides, and this is how he writes, and he says, this is the rules on how I am coming up to halacha, not my own svara. He says there are three pillars of halacha guidance: the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rush. And it only makes sense that where two of the three agree, we rule accordingly. So that is the first thing. If there are three opinions, right? So if they all three agree, there's nothing to talk about. And if one of them argues, so then you follow two out of one. And now the only problem is what's going to happen if...
Three different
opinions, or one person didn't say anything and you got two that argue, or all three don't say anything about it, right? So he's going to show you what he's going to do in a second. But before I get there, I just want to point out something to you, which also, they didn't agree in Ashkenaz overall with this system. They didn't agree with the three pillars to begin with. But even if they did agree with the three pillars, what's the problem for Europeans?
They're also Sephardic.
Not all. Two out of three are Sephardic.
The Rush.
Right? The Rush was Ashkenaz. Right. I mean, he ended up in Sephard, but that was their way of Ashkenizing Spain a little bit. But he came too late, you know. You know, this is already in... When did he come? He came in the... this was already in the 1300s, you know. And by 1390 is going to be the first... That's it. The golden age of Spain is for sure over in the 1390s. I mean, that's the Ferrara with the riots all through Spain, and hundreds of thousands of Jews had to convert because it was either death or conversion, and that was it. That was really 1391 was the beginning of the end. It just took 100 years to ended with the expulsion. Okay, but you're right. The Rif and the Rambam are Sephardim, and the Rush is Ashkenazim. So, like already, it's like, you know, slanted towards a Sephardic. It was a Sephardic bias. But okay, let's just keep that in. He says the exception would be in a case where, what happens if the three of them paskined one way and everybody else, that you saw that long list, everybody's paskining in a different way. So he says the rule is going to be we're going to follow everything else. Or what happens, the majority of scholars disagree with that opinion. As a result, the common practice is unlike that opinion. If, again, we're all doing, we're not following those two or three, because whatever most of the other Rishonim, then again, we won't follow that opinion as well. What happens if he didn't tell his opinion, and behold, we have the opinion of other poskim? So then he's going to go through that big list and decide on the majority. Okay? So in other words, if, let's say, they're equal, there's one and one, or there's none and none, and you can't, then how do you decide who's right? So then he's going to go and follow the rest of all of the Rishonim. I'm trying to remember where it is. I know it's in Hilchos Shabbos. There's a case, which I'm not sure if it has, I think it has to do with some sort of an Erev, something to do with carrying, where the Mishnah Brura... Mishnah Berurah has two parts. He has the Mishnah Berurah and he has the Bir Halacha. And the Bir Halacha is the more, you know, scholarly part of it. You know, he goes more in depth. So in the Mishnah Berurah, I counted. I think there was somewhere in Shabbos, is about what's the Halacha? And he counted, the score was 25 to 26. In other words, the Mishnah Berurah did pretty much what the Ramad did, I'm sorry, pretty much what the Beis Yosef did for much later, when, you know, and he counted about 25 Rishonim on one side and 26 on the other. And you count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I mean, it's also Rishonim had, Machlokas had to read an earlier Rishon. So if you're going to hold like this, if they take the Rif and they say like this, against this guy that says the Rif means, and you just put, but just to show there's so much to go through, and that's how he did. He would decide, the majority decides. None of the pillars indicate their opinions. We rule according to the opinions, again, the well-most scholars. Okay, this is how he decided how he was going to do it. He also throws in certain areas, is a minhagim, and the minhagim maybe is to be machmer, to say not to do it. So if that would be the case, then he would also not, he would not be makel. He would not, okay? So that's it. You can't be lenient. Don't be lenient because I say so. If your minug is to be machmir, that's it. You're stuck. Don't, you can't. Okay, that's, he wrote that in as well. All right, he writes in the city of Andreapol in the year 1522. He finishes it in the city of Sfat in the year 1542. This was a 20-year work. Then he says, you think he was finished, you think he'd put it aside and that's it, no more. But for the next 15 years, the next 12 years, he was busy revising and updating. And 12 years later, he had another pamphlet that he wanted to revise everything. And he had, the Beis Yosef had a tremendous, tremendous advantage over the Rishonim before him, in that he had something called, there was something called the printing press, which was phenomenal for Klal Yisrael, because this thing hit the printing press, boom, immediately it went all over the Jewish world. You know, it was much easier to get things out, as opposed to writing things by hand, copy after copy after copy after copy. I mean, that's almost like, if you want to know like a modern day miracle, like how did it happen, and if anybody could explain it to me, it would be amazing. Rashi was like 200 years, 300 years before a printing press. How did Rashi become universal all over the world? How were there enough copies of Rashi? And Rashi didn't write just one book. He wrote a commentary on all of Tanakh and all of the Gemaras. How did it happen? How
many daughters?
Yeah, how many daughters did he have? Five daughters, right? Let's say he had five daughters, right? There's a machlokes. He had four daughters, five, whatever. Let's say he had, whatever. So let's say each daughter was writing and writing and writing all they could. How many copies could they make? I mean, just you know, and okay, I guess maybe they paid people to start doing it, and people on their own, and it made difference. But it's just the miracle of Rashi. Just nothing. Just think about how did Rashi's commentary become so popular and make its way all over the Jewish world without a printing press? So he had the. So what happened with Rabbi Beis Yosef's printing press is he wanted to get the, instead of making a second printing of the old Shulchan Beis Yosef, he wanted to get in the new one, but he wasn't able to. They made the second printing of the original before he was able to get his 12 years of Hogals, 12 years of revisions in. So he ended up making it as a separate sefer. So he had like a separate pamphlet, so to speak, and how big, whatever, of his revisions. Today, I believe it's in the back of the book of the Beis Yosef itself. Okay, so that's what he did. These are the words of the Rabbi Yosef. Cairo, in addition, Hashem helped me review all this, gain additional insights. Okay. This is Sefer Beda Kabayis. He called it Sefer Beda Kabayis. He put this newest insight in a booklet. That's basically what he did with his work, because they couldn't get a new printing on everything. Okay. The Chidah writes that, I guess I see already, I'm not going to get to it this week, but there was so much to the Beis Yosef. He had a magid, a malach that he learned b'chavrusa with, that would talk in his. And this malach, this magid, he called it the magid, told him to name the sefer the Beis Yosef. He had special assistance from, because of Jews. So the Chidah writes about, he had special assistance from heaven, because the Jews in that generation were in need of such a work that would assemble all the laws and reveal their sources. So he was the one that did it. This is what I said. There were three rabbis that could have done this. Rav Yosef, Taitachik, and he was in Salonika. He was like the big rabbi in Salonika. Rav Yosef Kara, Rav Yosef Ibn Lev was also in, I think he was in Salonika. His son, I think, was the one that ended up the Rav of Yerushalayim with the Smicha controversy. I was agreed upon in heaven. He would do it because of his tremendous humility. That's the Chidah writing it. Chidah was in the 1700s, also a great Talmud Chacham. In Andrea Pol, he met Shlomo Molcho. We mentioned him. He was originally from Portugal, and he was a converso. And when he David Ruveni, who was a charlatan, you know, made like he was Mashiach, and inspired Fernandez. I forgot his last name, but he changed his name to Shlomo Molcho. He came to I think Salonika or that area, and he became from, and he got into Kabbalah, and Rabbi Yosef Kairo met him, and now Shlomo Molcho went back with David Ruveni to try to, I don't know, to try to do what, but they ended up taking him and they burnt him to a stake because he was originally a Christian, and Rabbi Yosef Kairo all his life said he wanted to die like Shlomo Molcho, because Shlomo Molcho died al Kiddush Hashem. He died as so he met him there, and that's what he always wanted to do. He wished to die in the same way. He also met Rav Shlomo Alkabaz, Lachadodi, the author of the Lachadodi. His first wife died at a young age. For a short time he lived in Nikopol, Bulgaria, but he decided to make his way to Eretz Yisrael. He passed through Salonika. That's where he met the big yeshivas, the great rabbanim of the day, and he journeyed. First, he went to Egypt, and then from Egypt, he ended up in Sfat. Who was he? Again, he was part of the Bezin of Rav Yaakov Beirav. Rav Yaakov Beirav, we mentioned last week, was like probably the greatest Talmudist of his generation. He was the one that started the Smicha controversy, and. Rav Yosef Kairo was one of the original four to be ordained with that smicha that they were hoping would be like the original smicha to bring back the smicha of Moshe Rabbeinu. He established a yeshiva in Cairo. Some of his famous talmidim was Rav Moshe Alshech. We have a sefer of his on Chumash. Rav Moshe Galanti, the Ramak, Rav Moshe Cordovero. And when Rav Yaakov Beirav passed away, Rav Yosef Kairo was considered the authority. He was like he took over in terms of that. By the way, in all his halachic sfarim, very rarely, or just not, he wouldn't bring Kabbalah or Zohar into halacha. He was a big Kabbalist of his own. Maybe we'll get to see it. I probably may next week speak more about the Rav Yosef Kairo, his other aspects of him. I realize how late this is going. But he was somehow able, this is halacha, this is the revealed law, this is the revealed Torah, and then Kabbalah, the secrets, that's a different, that's different. Everything, Sfat was the address for halachas from all over the world. Okay. Then, I only have 5 minutes for this, but basically what happened now is after he finished the Beis Yosef, so the Rav Yosef Kairo said he wanted to make something that, like almost like today we have a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, he wanted to make a halacha sefer, again daily, that everybody could learn from. Everybody. So, because now it was like you had the tour in his Beis Yosef, and he brought all the, like he did, this is his goals of bringing all the machlokasim and the resources and the reasons and what the, now he wanted to make like a, just what's the halacha? So he wanted to make his own sefer called the Shulchan Aruch. That's what he called it, the Magid told him, called the prepared table. And basically, he did it, and he broke it up into 30 parts. And the idea was everybody should learn it once a month. They review all the halachas. Now, if we were to think about it, I mean, anybody that knows what the Shulchan Aruch is, you laugh. You laugh. I just wanted to show you here. This is one of the Torah, the Arba Torim. Okay? So if you were to open up, this over here is just the Torah. Okay? On the side, you have, on the inside, you have the Beis Yosef, and on the outside, you have the Bach, the Bais Chadash, a different parish. And that's it, you know? You see every page, small print, no pictures. This is that you see the work of the Beis Yosef. Every page is like this. This is what he did for the tour. But you know, how do you get a hand on this? This is great for a yeshiva guy or a Talmud Chacham that wants to know all that halachas. What do you do for the average yeshiva guy or average balabas that wants to know the halacha? So we decided to follow the same four groupings. He decided to follow the same four groupings of Archaim, Eben Ezra, and he did it. He broke it into 30 parts with all the halachas. You see, and that is what made its way to Europe, and that was caused the story. He says, this is the halacha, right? And he didn't bring all the reasons and everything that was in the Beis Yosef. He just brought the halachas. And he may have, this is, and in his preface, the Shulchan Aruch, and this is what made a stir, because it made its way to Europe, and in Europe, you know, they don't, they did things the other way. Again, they didn't agree with the system of the three pillars, and they're all descendants from Rashi and the Tosas. Well, that's, you know, so you're calling, our, you know, and we're all different, so what do you do? So what basically happened is, the Rama, the Ramosha Isilis, who was like the of the greatest of his day, what he did is he did something unbelievable. He took the Machaber, and any time there was a difference, he just inserted where the halach is different. And then he put that out. He said, look, how can I argue with him? You know, he's the, you know, as a matter of fact, he was looking to do something like that himself. And then that came, that, and that was, instead of it just being for the Sfardim, now it was for everybody. Sfardim would just follow the Sfardim would follow what the Machaber, the Rav Yosef Cairo, and everybody else would follow the Ramah. But it didn't stop there. I mean, everybody just continued down the line. If I were to open up to a random page, okay, now you see even more Mepharshim here, right? So the regular print here, you see, is the Machaber. And then the Rashi print is at the Ramah. The Ramah called his pshat the Mapa. Mapa is the tablecloth, right? The Shulchan Aruch, he called it the Mapa. So, and that was the basis. Now, this became the basis, but it wasn't done because you had the Magen Avraham and the Taz, and then you get to the Bir Halacha and the Tshuva, and this is the Gra. You want to see where the Gra is? All the way down here. And the Vilna Gaon, that's, you know, that's in the 1700s. This is, again, 1500s. By the 1700s, and they just kept adding and adding and adding on it. So then, now you understand where the Chavetz Chaim came in. Because, and the Chavetz Chaim came in and said, now after 400 years of evolving and all this, what's the halacha? What do I do now? You know? So the Chavetz Chaim took the Ramah and the Machaber that he kept. He also said, if you're going to reprint it, you have to keep the beer, you have to keep the Shari Tshuva and Beer Hete, these two. Just so you keep these two, and then he wrote his parish. And basically he was a Malachi. He was the one that, you know, chose from, he did all the research for you, for mainly from the Ashkenaz, well, right, mainly from Ashkenazim, because he's really working for the Ashkenazim.
Is his Mishnah Berurah in there too?
No, Mishnah Berurah is not in here, but the Mishnah Berurah took everybody. He quotes from all of the poskim here and all the modern day poskim. He'll quote from the Lavush, you know, he quotes from, besides the Rishonim, he quotes from all the Achronim, he quotes from everybody. And he does it, again, it took him 25 years. The
you were pointing to something down at the bottom, the very bottom of the page. Who was that?
I probably pointed to Vilna Gaon. Because everybody heard of the Vilna Gaon. So we're, you know, so like I had a friend of mine who was, when he was teaching in the army, right, his name was Paul Laster, and he they made a mistake and they allowed him to, you know, speak to soldiers. So most soldiers were smarter. He says, look, you know, you're trying to teach them about religion. They didn't learn anything. So he opens up like a big, you know, and he says, yeah, Rabbi Yossi Cairo, Sparty, Gra. Ashkenazi, you see? So then, you know, they don't know. But they were all Ashkenazi. The reason they really, they were all Ashkenazi. And again, why? Because the Machaber spoke to everybody. There's nothing more. They all agreed with his system and they all agreed with his halacha. You know, today you'll have like Abaji Yosef, Yalkut Yosef, and the
Kafachayim.
So Sfardim have had made their halachas since then. But the development of the Shulchan Aruch, mainly when it hit, you know, Ashkenaz, and they all disagreed. And I really wish I could, I should go further, I could show you the Ramaz preface and the Yamshal Shlomos. But, all right. Anyway, so Mitzvah Shem, next week we're starting at
9 o'clock.
And I'll probably do the other facets of the Beis Yosef. Maybe we'll get into Kabbalah. So the men should go to the mikveh next week. I'm kidding.
We'll wear white.
I'm kidding. We're white, and we're just gonna, you know, and just, you know. So we'll probably talk about the because Kabbalah is gonna make a comeback, or like it's gonna become, and the different types of Kabbalah that were there, and so Mr. Shem, maybe we'll work on that. Maybe I'll call it Kabbalah. Okay, so this was revealed. Next week we're doing the secret. All right, Kol Tov, take care.